The Off the Ball Podcast Network. The Rugby World Cup on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Sexton promotes at the 10 metre line. It's spinning.
It looks good.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Rugby World Cup on Off the Ball. Updates, analysis, and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish. This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio.
Yeah, this is OTB Sports Radio, and this is the Rugby World Cup show. And what a setback for Ireland. 19-12, they've been beaten by Japan in the second game of their Pool A at the Rugby World Cup. An enormous setback after the incredible, the brilliant performance last week against Scotland. Did we get carried away? Did we think we were going to waltz our way through and talk up South Africa for the next 3 or 4 weeks, when now possibly it looks like it could be New Zealand in a quarterfinal? Who knows, even if we're getting there, because Japan and Scotland still have to play each other. Ireland do know, however, 2 wins out of 2 in their last couple of games against Russia and Samoa, and they should be getting into a quarterfinal. But what a setback this afternoon in Shizuoka. Ireland beaten 19-12. We have reaction coming up in the next 30 minutes or so, over the next 30 minutes, with James Downey, who's waiting on the line. But such a disastrous day for Ireland. And it started so well, 12-0 or 12-3 up after around 20 minutes after tries for Gary Ringrose and Rob Kearney, and Jack Carty converting one of them. And slowly but surely, that discipline just falling apart for Ireland. Japan picking off the penalties and even missing a couple as well throughout the match. Before you know, it's 12-9 at half-time and Ireland are just about clinging on in there. And then that first 20 minutes of the second half, Japan absolutely brilliant and just dominated Ireland, kept the ball in hand. And it was Kaneki Fukuoka who scored the try eventually, 20 minutes to go. And that's how Japan held on. They got another penalty to make it a 7-point game. And who would have thought, with Ireland 7 points behind in the last play of the match, Joey Carberry probably was the right decision. Kick the ball out, take the losing bonus point in one of the biggest shocks in Rugby World Cup history. It might not be on the same scale or is the same shock as Japan against South Africa 4 years ago, but it certainly has the same impact. And from an Irish point of view, so much to learn and so much to pick up and regroup now over the next few days before Russia on Thursday morning, just after 11 Irish time. So, as I say, we'll be here over the next half an hour or so to bring you all the reaction to that as well. First, though, I'm going to bring in Rory Best, who is speaking after the match. Let's hear what he had to say.
Well, we have to really appreciate Rory Best coming to talk to us now. There's a lot of people around the world that can't believe what they've just seen. Can you give us your thoughts on that game?
We knew how tough it was going to be. Anyone that is utterly shocked hasn't seen how good they are. We came in with a game plan, and we felt we were really prepared. But look, give credit to that team. They played really well. We made a few mistakes, a few unforced errors. We were on the wrong side of the penalty count. But look, I think Japan played really, really well. And look, they posed a lot of questions to us. And unfortunately, we couldn't come up with the right answers.
And this is your 100th test start. You've been around. You've seen a lot. Any monumental is that?
Look, like I say, we knew how tough this was going to be. When you play the host team, it's always tough, but like a team like Japan, I think we didn't start exactly how we wanted, but we got on the right side of the scoreboard, and then we let them play. And when you let a team like that play, you can sometimes be chasing shadows. Look, we're very, very disappointed, but at the same time, look, you have to give credit to Japan. They attacked us minute after minute, and we'll not be happy with how we played, but we'll have to dust ourselves down and get better.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, get your comments into us now on YouTube or Twitter, at Off The Ball. We are streaming on OTB Sports Radio, on offtheball.com, the Go Loud app, and across all of our social platforms, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, the like. Get all your comments in, and we'll put as many as we can to James Downey over the next while. And of course, all our rugby coverage here on Off The Ball is brought to you by Vodafone. Team of us, everyone in. Now, time to bring in James Downey, who's been waiting on the line the last couple of minutes. James, in short, what happened this morning?
I think you just kind of have to give credit to the Japanese. You know, I think you look at Jamie Joseph spoke after the game, and he said that they've been targeting this game for the past while anyway, while Ireland have only focused on it for the last 6 days. And it's quite important that, I think, you know, I think obviously we'd such a focus on Scotland, and then we've kind of flipped that. We've 6 days to focus on the Japanese. Obviously, they looked at Russia. They have a nice 8 day turnaround, and they know they can produce it. They did it 4 years ago. We seem to struggle against host nations as well. And it's just, look, it's credit to the Japanese. Look, we get to dust ourselves off. We're not knocked out. As you rightly said, it's two wins. If we can get 2 5-pointers, we'll go through, albeit two against the All Blacks potentially. So, look, still a bit there, still a lot to play for. But as I say, credit to the Japanese and how they attacked us and put us under pressure. But a few question marks still over certain aspects of the game, energy of the players, and kind of devoid of ideas, I guess, towards the end, you know, in the last 20 minutes especially. Thought we'd get one or two chances at least. And I guess we're lucky as well that Keith Earls made a scramble back to stop us actually not getting a losing bonus point.
Yeah, I think that is actually probably the more frightening aspect of it, that Keith Earls is tracking back and makes a miracle tackle with 2 minutes to play. And that denies Japan from getting their second try and pushing it out beyond 7 points. And even, as I mentioned right at the top of the show, Joey Carberry kicking the ball out when we're 7 points behind, and rightly so, to even just protect a losing bonus point. It just sums up how that game went from about 20 minutes on, when Ireland looked to be very much in control, to the point where we were clinging on for a losing bonus point.
Yeah, and I was watching the game and, you know, very comfortable after 20 minutes and said, oh, this would be grand, you know, and we'll get a bonus point potentially here. And I think everyone had spoken about it before. I think it might have even been a 21-point swing in the bookies. Look, Japanese are one of these teams who can really turn that on its head, and they certainly did. And Jamie Joseph and Tony Brown have done a great job, but you've got to be a little bit worried. Look, I think the players need to dust themselves off. Yeah, we made a lot of changes, but I still think this side is capable. I still wasn't too worried. I guess the Japanese stayed within touch, and I was, I suppose, coming into halftime, 12-9, I was, okay, they're still there, thereabouts. I would have liked us to get a score early second half just to kind of pull away. But look, it's when you're playing against the host nation, and everything they did, the crowds got behind and cheered, you know. And when they stopped their maul, they got behind it. When they got a penalty from a scrum, they knew that these are the areas they targeted, you know. And we looked a little bit, as I say, devoid of ideas. There was a lot of heads turning around going, where are we going? I understand the humidity that people have mentioned, and it's obviously been a bit of a factor. You look at taking off props after 45 minutes quite early in the game. But again, it's all credit to Japan and how they played and how they put us under so much pressure at breakdown, I think. Also, they're a joy to watch going forward, the attack and play. Not many teams that have a crack from their own goal line in a big game, you know, and they add up the yards and eventually go up to the far end, you know. And it's just one of these teams who we maybe took our eye off the ball a small bit, and we were punished as a result of it. Again, look, it's a huge setback. The positive thing again is it's a 5-day turnaround. Normally that wouldn't be a positive, but I see it as a positive that we can really kind of draw a line under it tonight. Players have watched the game tonight, draw a line and kind of focus to the next game. I can't come soon enough.
Yeah. What actually happened from that? We spoke there about how it looked quite good early on, and, you know, you're thinking maybe when that second try goes in, there's a bonus point in the offering here. That was 21 minutes into the game. It was Ireland's last score. What actually happened at that point? How did the game change? Did Ireland stop doing something? Did Japan start doing something?
I actually feel that the kicking game was quite interesting. I think if you look at the Scotland game, how we played, we got a lot of 50-50s in the Japanese game. But against Scotland, the kicks were right on the money. You know, Conor Murray's kicks were on the money, Johnny's kicks were on the money, and we were winning these contestables. And they were just a little bit far. I also thought the Japanese back three were quite decent, and they ran it back and put us under pressure. We just needed to control possession a bit more. Again, we may have put a few more extra bodies into rucks in the Japanese. As I say, put us under so much pressure at the breakdown that we actually put so many players in. If we popped to another guy, he was on his own, and the Japanese would target that breakdown. And every time they slowed down the ball, it was just frustrating to watch. Like, we kicked the ball aimlessly away sometimes when I actually think that we just needed to hold on to possession and wear them down a small bit. Again, attack-wise, we looked quite blunt. We didn't seem to offer much. Even when Joey came on, he carried a lot, and that's not really what you want to see from a playmaking 10 to come on and have an impact. And another frustrating thing, you know, and then we take off Chris Farrell, and just small little errors that kind of went their way as well, and small 50-50s. CJ Stander taking a little bit too much out of the ball, and and popping into Chris Farrell, and Chris Farrell ran into him in his accidental offside scrum Japan, and they eventually score from that. So it's the errors that we were getting away with last week, or Scotland were making. We were making a few of them this week, and we were punished, and we weren't clinical as well. And there was another reason, turned over a lot of unforced errors, and just wasn't our day, you know. And as I say, it's kind of a lucky thing it wasn't a knockout game, because we'd be going straight away home.
Yeah, I suppose that is one positive to take from it, a small one at the very least. On the kicking, like, for example, I have been reading during the week about how Japan had been, they had been conditioning themselves over the last year or two for a game that is going to be roughly 55 minutes ball in play. That's way over what the reality is of ball in play time in a standard game of Test rugby. You're looking at probably in the mid-40s. So they're kind of physically conditioning themselves for the fact that when the clock is striking 80 minutes, they still have 10 minutes of fuel left inside them. And we would have seen in the first game and over the Pacific Nations Cup, they're comfortable just to hold on to the ball, to play a patient game of rugby and go through phases and wear teams down and spread the ball wide as well and hold on to it for long spells. When you looked at how much Ireland kicked from kind of that 20-minute period on, especially in the second half when, you know, legs are getting a bit weary, are you putting yourself into a position where you're kind of just giving them the ball back and accepting the fact that you might have to defend here for 15, 20 phases, and ultimately is that wearing you out?
Yeah, it does. Like, when the amount of tackles that you're going to put in physically is actually going to take its toll, and it mightn't take its toll in the first 50, 60 minutes. It's as you say, those kind of championship minutes, those last 20 minutes of or 10 minutes even, when bodies fall off, because everyone's going to have a certain condition. And look, as I say, the Japanese, I think the way they attacked as well, they moved our players around, and our players look quite lethargic on the field. As I said, I mentioned before, a bit of lack of energy. And I thought that everything the Japanese did, they did a tempo. Ireland looked quite lethargic in how we attacked. It was slow, it was one-out runners. You know, I just felt that we didn't fire too many shots, really, you know. And look, we're happy to give the ball back to the Japanese. They wanted to keep the ball in play. That's fine, suits them. There was no scrum for 20 minutes, the first 20 minutes, you know, and that's a lot of time for players to be on their feet. But still, again, I still think we should have kind of come out on top eventually. I thought the experience we had, that we would have worn them down. Still, like, you know, second half then, I thought we'll get a chance. But I guess we didn't, and that's, again, credit to the Japanese. But they were sublime today in how they played. You know, as I say, such positive rugby. As I say, being able to run the ball from their own 22. Just going back to one of those kicking points as well. I just came into my head there. Just some of the crossfield kicks we did. They had the back three Marshall. We did one or two Jack Hardy, a couple of kicks, as you say, first 20 minutes. We did extremely well to kind of get the ball to the width that way. And then we kind of stopped, which is, we didn't need to. If you're going to manipulate that space over on the wings to bring a winger up, there's got to be space elsewhere. And I just think we weren't accurate enough with how we kicked.
Yeah, like on that first period as well, even just down to the possession and territory, I'm looking here, I think it was 28 minutes in, Ireland had 60% possession, 71% territory, playing the game in Japan's half, holding on to the ball for as long as they could. By half time, even in those 12 minutes, that had got down to 44% possession and 50% territory. So Japan had kind of eked their way back into it. And it seemed like a turning point in the first half. My brother was over at the game. He texted me at half time saying, I don't know if you remember that scrum penalty that Japan won, kind of 30-odd minutes gone on the clock. He said even just that moment, it just felt absolutely seismic. The stadium itself absolutely erupted. And even by halftime, he had got the impression almost that there was just this kind of a shift, even mentally as much as physically, that Japan suddenly, even though small little things can kind of just give you a bit of hope and let you back into the game and make you realise that, you know, you might be down here on the scoreboard, but, you know, the game is there for you.
It's a game of small wins, and I remember that penalty because they celebrated like, I think the commentator said, like, he'd scored a try, you know. But these small little moments, they talked it up all week about how to target the Irish scrum. And you looked at, as I say, just that little win, what it did. As you say, those plates are turning, you know, these small little shifts. You've got to win your one-to-one battles. If you can do that, the game's a lot easier. And the Japanese did that, I feel, today, you know. And they put us under pressure. Our line-out went quite well. And then I suppose when Rory did throw a bad one, It got them right back in. It's small little things, as you said, and you could feel the crowd and you could hear the crowd at every little error or every positive impact that Japan had on the game, that it really got behind them. And you could kind of sense that something was happening, and you just kind of hoped it wasn't today and it wasn't against us and we'd do something just to stun the crowd. But it was a 16th man for them. And I think you look at the players, I think when Matthew went off, I was quite happy to see him go off because he was quite a devastating ball carrier and has been extremely good. But Michael Leach comes on then and he plays out of his skin, and he wouldn't have been happy to be dropped, you know. And he had such a huge impact, but again, lifted the crowd again. And all these players really stepped up and added those extra percentages and just got their, won their one-to-one battles against our players. And as you say, when you have that home nation behind you, and we were kind of looking around, looking to see who's going to make something happen. And again, in that heat, the guys are struggling and the energy was sapped from them.
Yeah, you mentioned Michael Leach there and just the impact he had when he came on. I just kind of highlighted a couple of stats from him even, just to read out. Since he came on midway through the first half, 7 carries for 37 metres over the game, a defender beaten, a clean break and an offload as well. Michael Leach then in defence, he had 11 tackles, none missed. So physically he had an enormous impact for Japan in that second half, and Ireland struggled kind of to deal with him.
Yeah, they did, but they struggled to deal with a lot of players. I think Matsushima on the wing was extremely good. You've got to watch out, like, and Lafayette in at 13, some of his skills and handling was sublime there, and his ability to make that offload just to get those inroads. I thought, conversely, you look at Ireland and how we offloaded initially at the start and looked quite an entertaining open game, and then we stopped doing that, and the Japanese kept going. And as you say, it's the positive impact of the players that the Japanese had, that the fatigue will set in when you're stopping these big guys constantly going and questioning whether they're going to carry, or these guys have the ability to offload and go out the back as well. And they're getting gain line as a result of it by having different options running at the line. And the defenders weren't able to get a proper shot and knock them back. And you build that momentum. You mentioned there about the Japanese getting a bit of positivity from penalties or little wins. Ireland needed a few little wins to drive them back defensively. Thought Dave Kilcoyne made one or two impacts when he came off at the start of, or came on the start of the second half, off the line, hitting them back. But it was unsustainable, which is going to worry you a little bit as well. You know, you need to constantly put these teams under pressure, put them on the back foot. But again, the Japanese are winning collisions. As I say, the breakdown was where I think they won the game. Every time that they carried, they got quick ball. Our energy seemed to have sapped. Peter O'Mahony got on the wrong side of the referee a couple of times. And when he called Rory Best and had a word and said, look, number 6 again has been off feet. And then they make the change. You're just in the wrong eyes of the referee, while Japan constantly slowed down ball, were smart in how they played. And then they were able to fill the line defensively. And that physical toll obviously paid dividend.
Was it a bit naive of Ireland that, like you mentioned, all those penalties, Peter O'Mahony getting on the wrong side of Angus Gardner? Given the game Angus Gardner had last week in the France and Argentina game, he came under a lot of criticism that he was letting a lot of kind of stuff around the breakdown and the offside line go. You would have had to assume he was going to be a lot stricter on that today. Ireland gave away a couple of penalties early on, but they just kept going back to do that same thing. It was like they weren't kind of adapting to what Angus Gardner was doing. Would it have been smarter maybe to leave out a couple of bodies at the ruck and just maybe kind of let Japan kind of have the ball and wait for the mistakes to come? Because, you know, it's a humid night. Knock-ons can easily come in those kind of situations. And you look at the penalty count. 9 penalties Ireland conceded. 6 of those in kickable positions. And who knows, if Tamura had made a couple of those, Ireland aren't even getting a bonus point out of the game.
Yeah, I think, well, the modern game, the referee's part of your analysis as well as the opposition. And I suppose you look at how the French game went and how the offside line was marshalled. I think he let a lot go today, but I think he let a lot go for both sides, to be honest. And you do have to play the referee, and I think you do need to maybe be smart and go, okay, we've had a little word here, maybe leave out one body, get an extra body in a defensive line and bring that line speed that Andy Farrell brought in the first game, you know, and that he'd implemented there. If we can just put that pressure on them, get them again, get those small wins. I just feel that Pete was just one, I suppose, of those, but they just halted everything we did. And as I say, you've got to give so much credit to the Japanese and how they thwarted every single shot we fired. And It's a little bit concerning as well. I suppose some players would be kind of, well, I wouldn't say be happy that they missed it, but they have a chance now to kind of come in and redeem it and really get things back on a forward keel, because I feel that something needs to happen. It's going to be a reaction the next couple of weeks, but maybe this can be the kind of kick we need to bring us on. But on this viewing, I feel that we may struggle.
Yeah, Joe Schmidt mentioned the Ireland having a 6-day turnaround in comparison to Japan's 8-day turnaround. Like, it's hard not to see that as a bit of an excuse, given, you know, given how well Ireland played last week, given Japan were quite sluggish, and for the first 20 minutes of this game, Ireland, they were playing the right game plan, and it was almost as if once they got into that lead, they decided to revert back to type and keep things tight again. But it was the kind of game plan where it was going to wear you out physically. You're bringing in a lot more collisions into the game. And if you do have a shorter turnaround, that's the type of game plan where you're going to feel it then later on in the match.
Yeah, exactly. And this is when you're going to feel it as well, going into a 5-day turnaround, I think it is, for the next game. And look, I personally don't believe in that kind of turnaround. You have enough time to get recovery. It's not as if you're going to be doing anything major on the field. There'll be no hard sessions. It'll mostly be kind of walkthroughs, making sure everyone knows. Obviously, he'll have his power plays for certain games, which we didn't see today. But I feel that, look, we've known about this for so long. It's not as if we can suddenly pull up a flag and go, oh, it's 8-day turnaround or 5-day turnaround, 6-day turnaround, and suddenly blame it on that. If we'd won, there wouldn't have been any mention of it. So I think it's part of it. Look, Japan, our host team, they get that time. I feel that we've known this is how it is. He's changed it up a little bit as a result of that. And we still have players who he rested. And we still have, a 5-day turnaround to come. So if you wanted to play players, you play them hard for the first two games, and then you can rest players or rotate players for the last two games. But no, he chose not to do that. And I think as well, as you mentioned, it's that game plan that we played of being so close to rooks constantly. Trying to, like, if you look at how Japan beat South Africa 4 years ago, obviously Japan have evolved an awful lot, but they're going to chop tackle. They're not going to stop tackling. They rarely make errors. And what they do, they're very good at it. And we kind of played into their hands a small bit, especially that last 60. Like you say, we haven't scored in 60 minutes, which is just an utter disaster. You're not really going to win any test matches, and never mind World Cup games, if you're not scoring for 60 minutes. I just feel that it's a little bit frustrating to kind of see, given conditions, given the turnaround, the game plan we played, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more wider. As I say, we started quite well with Riccardi and varying kicks and stuff like that, but then we seemed to, I don't know what it was, that things seemed to switch off a little bit, especially second half. And it was quite interesting.
Rory Best was still out there on 60 minutes when that try went in. Given he played a full 80 last week, and you have someone on the bench like Sean Cronin, who, as we know, has an enormous impact when he comes off the bench and is such a powerful runner, an explosive player, how surprising was it to see Rory Best being out there for 60 minutes, given as well he changed Keane Healy and Tadhg Furlong, albeit it looked for small little injuries quite early in the second half? I'm looking at the... There was a moment, I think, about 50 minutes into the game, 10 minutes into the second half. Ireland have a line-out in the Japan 22. Brilliant platform. And it's stolen again. That's when the line-out problems were kind of starting to come in. And it just looked like a very lethargic throw. I think it was up maybe around 2 in the line-out. And it just looked like the ball was very slow getting in there. To have someone like Rory Best out there for playing 140 consecutive minutes across two games, and only making the change then when you go behind, it's a lot to put on someone like Sean Cronin coming on and saying, right, now you have to change the game. Were you surprised to see him out there for so long, I suppose?
Yeah, well, I was surprised to see him out there for 80 in the first game, and I thought that that was with a view to we can maybe play him for 40 minutes and sub him off and give Shawnee some game time, because ultimately he can't rely on Rory to play four games at 60 minutes, even a pop. You know, I think that they had a game plan in mind in terms of we're going to play Rory for the first 80. Obviously, they looked at 60 for this, and then they'll rest him for the last two. That might have changed now. I'd like to have seen Sean come on earlier. As you say, I think from that line out, I think that was off a penalty. We kicked it up, and that was a massive change, you know. A score there, and we could be having a completely different conversation, but that's a hypothetical. So I'd like to have seen Sean come on earlier. Yeah, I think he was fatiguing. That 80 minutes caught up with him a bit, and given humidity, and I think Sean would have made it. Like, as you say, you've got Keane Healy who's come off, and Tadhg Furlong who's come off. So why not change, which normally happens, a three front rows. I guess he wanted to keep some more leadership out there, but I still feel there's enough leadership out in the field to be able to control that game and actually steer through and get the right result. I would like to have seen Sean on earlier, yeah. And I think then with some other kind of withdrawals, it was like Rob Kearney went off as well and Chris Farrell, and we ended up with Luke McGrath the wing, and that's not where you want your kind of reserve scrum half to be in the last 10-15 minutes of a game when you're chasing a game.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to run through a few comments coming into us here. This is from In Bod We Trust 13. No leadership again. Best O'Mahony, Stander and Murray have shown no form since 2018 and had no business being in the squad. I don't know, is he talking about the match day squad there or the 31-man squad? I think for the guys like that, it might be a bit harsh to say they shouldn't be in the 31-man squad. Coco and Jumbo says New Zealand will smash the Irish. It's bigger than the Springboks upset. Irish are predictable. Everyone knows their every move. David Thomas Farrell says we'll give New Zealand a good game in the quarterfinal. Nothing has changed. Someone's seeing the positivity out there at the very least. The lad ROS says I want Ireland rugby team to lower my coffin when I died so they can let me down one more time. It's one of the oldest sports jokes in the book, I think. From Kramer PJB, The real pool of death. Congratulations, Japan. The pre-tournament hype of being the most closely fought World Cup are ringing true. Rob Kavanagh says, what worries me, if Japan is the third best team playing this style of rugby behind England and South Africa, where is our hidden plan B? This is Schmidt's second selection blunder in the space in a World Cup. Probably going back to 2015, I would say there. NJK Bad says, I agree with the humidity call. They looked unable to respond. Another commenter here, just no heart, no national anthem, no pride, no fight. Well, I suppose there is a legitimate reason for the lack of a national anthem. I noticed a lot there was a Japan forward jogging back from an Irish ruck and completely in the way, slowing the Irish rucks down. Should they not have thrown the ball into him to get a free? That's one, I suppose, James, for you. Like, that's the sort of stuff that just happens in games, though. And like, I mean, Ireland are no strangers to that as well. You're trying to slow down ball, you're rolling out to a particular side of a rock, and it's just all, it's these dark arts of the game, and I think every side in the world does it. It's just how well you master it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think you'd normally see Conor Murray kind of look for penalties, and I think a couple of occasions off a scrum, they'd pick and they'd hit up or play a short target, and they'd come back to the blind side again. And that's normally looking for a lazy retreating front row who's kind of just getting up out of the scrum, a bit fatigued, and you're trying to get a cheap penalty. And to be fair and credit to Japan, they got back in the line, and I think we did it two or three occasions, and then we've gone back down the blind side, and worst case scenario, we get a box kick. Look, it's just one of these areas, I think, there that we'd normally try and work through. I think Joshua Naflier was penalised as well for not rolling away, which is quite harsh, I felt. I didn't know he had anywhere to go. He would have struggled to get away from there, but again, they were smart in how they did it. If your referee is going to let you away with it, you're going to keep playing to the edge of it. It's frustrating, you know.
But if a team is being smart, I mean, and the referee isn't spotting it, you just have to be smarter, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You do, yeah. And you need to kind of, what you need to do, you need to be more aggressive perhaps and take him out of there, or highlight to the referee a lot more that, look, this guy's kind of slowing down ball. Because I heard Conor Murray a couple of times actually saying, he's there, and the ref was saying the ball's available, the ball's playable. So I guess you're looking for it a little bit, but if there's a guy there, and a couple of times he may have been able to put the ball or pass the ball off the lazy retreating runner, but maybe we should have done it. But I guess Conor may have thought that, look, ultimately we should have beaten this side. We had the skill to do it, the quality to do it, but I guess we didn't.
It has to be worrying overall, though, because it's something we've seen over the last few years. In games where games are tied and Ireland are starting to fall behind on the scoreboard, it's rare enough, particularly at halftime. It's never happening if Ireland are behind at halftime. But when Ireland are starting to go behind on the scoreboard, they always struggle to get back on level terms and to get ahead again. And it's been a recurring theme, and it has to be something that if Ireland are in a World Cup quarter-final, which we're hoping they are, that either way, they're going to be playing South Africa and New Zealand. probably at the moment, and it looks like it might be New Zealand, but it has to be a huge concern just how much Ireland struggle in games when the scoreboard is tight.
Yeah, yeah, potentially I can see that, all right. I, looking at that last 20, 25 minutes in my head, I was like, okay, if we can get something out of this, if we can get a draw even, that would be as good to show, look, when we are behind, we can actually show that we can come back and produce it when we're under pressure. But the worrying thing is that, yeah, we didn't look like it at all, you know, and it was like a lot of people looking around and there wasn't that much energy. There wasn't that much bite. It was like we needed to really go for it, and we didn't. And no one stepped up. I can understand a small bit about that leadership question that they've mentioned. People really need to step up and kind of go, right, this is what we need to do. Increase tempo, play the way the Japanese played. When we are chasing a game, it is an area, as you say, if we're playing the All Blacks there, we flip it, we say the All Blacks are in that position. 99% of people, I'm sure, would say that they'd actually come out with a win on that, you know, and that's where we struggle, and that's where it may or may not come back to bite us in the ass, you know. And I think that we certainly have a situation where we need to learn, and we need to learn quickly. As we say, we've mentioned that quick turnaround, but against the All Blacks, or potentially again, but we need to really finish off teams, if we are chasing them from behind, we need to learn how to game manage and get ourselves back into it, be it a three-pointer. We mentioned that line out as well, that penalty to the corner. These are small moments that are putting us under pressure. And yeah, it is extremely worrying when we are going into the last 20 minutes chasing the game. And what do we do? What do we don't have the game plan. It's so physical. The players are out on their feet. And to suddenly increase tempo, it can be quite hard to flip that switch. And it's quite worrying.
And is it naive to think in those games that if we just keep doing this same thing over and, you know, try wear teams down physically, that it is going to work out eventually? Ireland are going to get over the line, because it hasn't looked like it in recent games. That, you know, when New Zealand are behind, as you say, 99% of the time you back them to come back. And generally it's because when something isn't working, they have something else to go to. They have their plan B. Whereas with Ireland, it's just, you know, just keep going, keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting that eventually it's all going to work out.
Yeah, and I think that that's where we need. I think it's come from the Six Nations as well. And if teams stop us playing a certain way, can we flip and play another way? You know, and we need to have a different sort of style as well. And I think given the players out there as well, I think with Jack at 10 and when Joey's coming on, and I thought Gary Ringrose actually did extremely well, you know, and a lot more of an attacking threat. You look at these guys and you expect quite an open game, and you want to get the ball in Armour's arms and in Stockdale's hands, and, you know, just didn't seem to be able to generate that fast ball that we were looking for off rooks. As they say, the Japanese did such a good job on our rooks and slowing it down that forward momentum to actually pull it out the back. And then when we do throw it, they get an intercept and they just bring in line speed because we're forcing the game. And we don't look as comfortable forcing a game than we do when we're in control and we slow the ball down and it suits us when we're ahead. But when we're not ahead, we certainly need to have something else. But again, if our plan A is stopped and stifled, we need a different game plan to get us out of a hole.
And if Ireland are in a quarter final, regardless of who it is against, has the confidence dipped a lot since last week? What would you be feeling going into that?
The confidence has dipped a lot. A little bit, maybe not a lot, sorry. I think it's got to take a lot more positives in the Scottish game, yeah. But look, we're still in it, as I say. We can't potentially be as bad as that. So that's a line in the sand. We can push that one forward now and go quick turnaround. Players won't dwell over this too long. You can't. You're going to have to focus on the next game, 5 points. And I guess that's the beauty of playing these games every couple of weeks. You don't have too long to think about them. You're into the next one. Get some more positivity back. Get a decent performance under our belt and raise standards again. We're a country who kind of jump on this. We were all gung-ho last week and positivity. And now after this, I'm sure there'll be some obituaries written. But still think we need to kind of, it's half full. We need to learn from this. And obviously, quick turnaround to produce it and get a positive result.
Yeah, I might just get the Pool A table up on our screen there. I think we have it just to look through. So at the moment, Japan on top on 9 points, Ireland second on 6. Then you've Samoa on 5, Russia on 0, and Scotland on 0 as well. But Samoa and Scotland to play each other in a couple of days' time. So looking at that, we do know if Ireland get 2 bonus point wins out of their games against Samoa and Russia over the next 10 days or so, or the next 2 weeks, they will be in the quarterfinal. So 16 points would be enough for a quarterfinal. You'd have to wait and see, though, whether or not it's going to be good enough for first or second, because if Japan win their way through against Samoa and against Scotland, they would top the pool. You'd have to be hoping for Scotland to do Ireland a massive favour in the final game if Ireland want to get a first place finish in that pool. But if you're a Scottish fan as well, I imagine, you're going to be watching that and feeling very, very nervous about what's to come with Japan. James, just to talk as well, one thing we didn't mention even at the top of the show, but it was news that came out after the game. Jack Conan ruled out of the rest of the World Cup. Jordy Murphy, who was pulled from the Ulster side late yesterday evening, is flying over now. I don't know when he's flying, but he is flying over. It's been confirmed by the IRFU. So he's going to be linking up with the squad. A huge blow for Jack Conan, obviously. He was someone who came on and did brilliantly last week, made a huge amount of tackles, and was getting to a point where some people were saying maybe he should be getting in there ahead of CJ Stander in the first team. But an enormous blow for him, as good as Jordy Murphy is to come in. You just hate to see someone's tournament ended like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you've said there. I think it's a huge blow. I think especially coming into the next two games, because we need 5 points in both games. And I think that game plan would have suited Jack Conan a hell of a lot more than CJ. I think what he's done with Leinster in the latter end of last season just brings that extra bit of dynamism to that number eight role. I think CJ's got the physicality, yes, but I just think that Jack has that little bit extra, you know, and to see him get injured, it's a blow for himself personally as well as the Irish squad. But hopefully he can bounce back from it, I suppose, and come back and produce with Leinster. But now you're looking at Jordy's come over. Jordy's more of a kind of utility. You can slide him across the back row. And another, say, a lighter version of Reece Ruddock potentially. And look, Jordy certainly was a big call initially, I think, to leave Jordy out because he's one of Joe's men. And look, I'm sure Joe knows exactly what Jordy will bring to the party, as most of us do. And he certainly won't let anyone down, but a big blow, massive blow for Jack, and thought it could have been a huge tournament for him personally.
Yeah, and just when you see the type of player he is, almost would have been kind of perfect to come on in this game today. Kind of the pace he plays that, and he's always good for an offload as well, keeping the ball alive. Really disappointing for him. That's probably where we are going to wrap up this afternoon, James. Thanks a million for joining us, and we might speak to you again soon. I know you're down in Limerick this afternoon watching Munster.
Yeah, heading down now to Limerick, so doesn't stop. Hopefully get a bit of positivity down
let
there.
Let us know if anyone gets pulled from that team late on before kickoff, all right?
I will indeed, yeah.
James Downey there, thanks a million for joining us to look back on what was a very, very disappointing day for Ireland at the Rugby World Cup. Just to bring you up to date on a couple of the scores at the moment, half-time between South Africa and Namibia, and South Africa well on their way for their bonus point win to get their first victory of the tournament after last week's defeat against New Zealand. 31-3 up at half-time. 2 tries for Mbanambi. Francois Lowe also crossing the line, as well as Makosi Mapimbi and Likanyo Am as well. And Elton Yankees slotting 3 of those conversions and a penalty as well, I think. So good start for South Africa. They are cruising towards that victory. And earlier on this morning, Argentina got back on track. A 4-try win, a bonus point victory, 28-12 against Tonga. Julian Montoya scoring a hat-trick in that game. All 3 of those tries coming in the first 26 minutes as well, while Santiago Carreras also crossed the line. All 4 of those tries in the first half as well, so they kind of shut up shop after the break. But Benjamin Urdapilleta converting all of those. Argentina back on track, but they still have an enormous task if they're to get through to the quarterfinals after last week's defeat against France. They know realistically they're probably going to have to beat England later on in this Pool C campaign if they want to get out of that. That's almost it for us. Just to bring you up to date on the games coming up a little bit later on in the over the weekend, we can bring it up on our screen there as well. At the moment, those latest scores. South Africa 31-3 up on Namibia. Well, Georgia, Uruguay 6:15 tomorrow. Set your watch for that. Who knows? Uruguay might have another shock in their shock to bring us after they beat Fiji a few days ago. But a really short turnaround for them. Georgia, disappointing defeat against Wales on the opening day, but there were a few positives in that second half in particular. Well, the big game of the weekend is tomorrow morning, 8:45 Irish time, Australia against Wales. What we assume is going to be a Pool D decider. The winner more than likely is going to finish top of that pool and go up against the second place team in Pool C, which will be either England, France or Argentina. So both of those sides winning their opening games there at 8:45 a.m. tomorrow morning. And then one for Ireland fans to watch. Can Scotland bounce back from their really disappointing performance against Ireland last week? They're up against Samoa on Monday morning, 11:15 Irish time. That's all we have time for on Off the Ball's Rugby World Cup show. With thanks to Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. We are going to be back on the FM on Off the Ball from 1 o'clock. We have a special, another debrief of this game coming up at 1:30 on Off the Ball and offtheball.com and OTB Sports Radio and all of our social channels as well. Andy Dunn, Johnny Murphy and Louise Galvin are going to be joining us in studio to look back on that game. While we'll have even more tomorrow, an even further debrief, chance to pick things apart even further. Bron O'Driscoll is going to be on the line and Malcolm O'Kelly will join us as well. So plenty more rugby coming your way on Off the Ball, and the Rugby World Cup show will be back as well next Tuesday, where we'll have a little bit more to see from what's coming up with Ireland. And we'll be looking at all those changes that are possible as well for Ireland. Their team news should be in by Tuesday morning, Irish time. So we'll speak to you soon.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.